Hi, everyone, and welcome to Food Disruptors, an IFT podcast that brings you the latest insights and perspectives from some of the brightest minds in the science of food. In each episode, our guests discuss the ever-changing intersection of entrepreneurship, innovation, and science and their roles in advancing our global food system. This week, we're partnering again with IFT's International Division to explore the world of food foundations. It's a play on words that focuses on foundations that work on improving global food and agriculture, and also that food is the foundation for global health, well-being, and prosperity. I'm your host, Matt Teagarden, and today we're talking to the Barilla Center for Food and Nutrition, a foundation who describes itself as a multidisciplinary independent think tank working for food sustainability. Today's discussion is going to be moderated by Donna Rosa, an International Business Development Services Consultant and the IFT International Division Chair-Elect. And she'll be speaking with Dr. Marta Antonelli, the Research Program Manager at the Barilla Center for Food and Nutrition. Thanks so much, both of you, for being with us today. And Donna, why don't you introduce yourself?
Yeah, Matt, as you just mentioned, I'm Donna Rosa, and I'm the Chair-Elect of the International Division and the organizer of this podcast series, Food Foundations. I work in international development, helping small farms, farm organizations, and food processors with the business and commercial aspects of their operations.
Awesome. And Marta, tell us a little bit about your background.
I am Marta Antonelli. I am a social scientist, work on sustainability and food since 2008 as a researcher and also as a journalist. And over the past 3 years, I have served as research program manager of the Barilla Foundation. The Barilla Foundation was founded in 2009, and the aim was to explore the multifaceted dimensions of food systems across different dimensions, environmental, economic, and social as well. And this all happened after the food crisis and the economic downturn, which exploded in 2007 and 2008, when food prices of all major commodities peaked in nearly 30 years. And this had really huge consequences on the food system as a whole and highlighted how broken and unsustainable it was to all stakeholders, from business to international organizations to policymakers. And so it was in this context that the fourth generation of the Barilla company owners wanted to understand the challenges ahead, so the driving forces, the dynamics that would have shaped the food system for the following decades. And that's why the Barilla Foundation was founded. And today, 10 years later, we see that the root causes of this crisis still persist. And that's why today the mission and of the foundation is still to accelerate the transformation of global food system through education programs, through science-based projects and partnerships, and also a number of outreach activities. So in a nutshell, we work with institutions from municipal to international. We develop education programs encompassing both formal and informal learning. We also emphasize the role of responsible and good business. And finally, we are really committed to communicate our projects, our research projects through reports, case studies, books, but also digital media, because we really want to change, to engage people.
So that's really interesting, Marta. BCFN explores areas that are not commonly dealt with in the food industry, like food and migration and food paradoxes. How did you come up with these program areas?
Well, the Barilla Foundation has always tried to look at food systems with a very comprehensive approach, and also with the contribution of different disciplines, from nutrition to economics to environmental and political sciences, also through the advisory board members that come from different parts of the world and have different background, which inform our decisions and research stream. And I really think that this approach has enabled us to always have a progressive thinking, and also to detect new and emerging topics that deserve attention. So one of them, for example, was food emigration that you mentioned, a project that we launched a couple of years ago with MacroGeo, and that was aimed at understanding the role of food insecurity, climate change, and natural resource scarcity in the Mediterranean region as a driver for migration, and also the extent to which food could be considered, could be used as an element, as a factor of integration in the destination countries. So very, very big question. And what the project highlighted is that food, or rather I would say the lack of food, is a very strong driver of migration, both within Africa and to the European countries. And as the World Food Programme, for example, of the United Nations highlighted recently, when you have a percentage point increase in food insecurity, this also increases refugee outflows by almost 2%. And this is all compounded by climate change impacts, by conflicts, by political instability, which further strain food supply, jeopardize, of course, livelihoods, especially for smallholder farmers, and thus lead to migrations. And this was a very, very important project for us. And I think that this all calls for policymakers to tackle migration, underlying causes, and the food system is for sure one of them.
Yeah, that's really, really interesting. Do you have any prognosis as to whether the food migration is going to get worse or better in the future? Has the UN looked at that?
Yeah, this is really hard to say. What we know is that it's going to grow deeper with the changes associated with climate change. And in the Mediterranean, this is particularly true because we know it is a hotspot for water scarcity, for climate change impacts, adverse impacts, which, you know, change evapotranspiration patterns, change temperatures, and so on. So this is expected to strongly affect agricultural outputs, which are the basic source of livelihoods for farmers. So, yeah, this is a trend, a very worrying trend.
Yeah, it kind of makes me wonder what we as food technologists could do to help this situation. But let's move on to you mentioned or I mentioned earlier the three food paradoxes. You've identified food access and excess, use of natural resources, and food waste. Can you briefly explain each one and how is the best way to address each one of them?
Yes, absolutely. So in 2014, we came up with this idea of conceptualizing the major food system challenges into three paradoxes. So the coexistence of hunger, overweight, and obesity on the one hand, the competition for natural resources between humans, energy, and livestock, and also the persistence of food loss and food waste. And what we see is that today these challenges still persist and are still very, very strong. So, for instance, the newly released FAO report on the state of food and nutrition highlighted that over 820 million people in the world are still hungry today, while food insecurity affects over 2 billion people, meaning that the four dimensions of food security, availability, access, utilization, and stability are not continuously guaranteed to people. And for the first time, attention was also given to the fact that a percentage of population in North America and Europe also are facing these problems in regular access to safe, nutritious, and sufficient food. And the number of population affected by these problems accounts for 8% of population in these two areas. And moreover, what we saw is an obesity pandemic that is costing society up to $3.5 trillion per year, that is going to be compounded by climate variability and extremes which exacerbate malnutrition. And this really needs calls for a rethink of the whole system and to, you know, reorient our actions according to the principles of sustainable development, also with a deeper connection and coherence between agricultural and nutrition policies. The second paradox instead looks at agriculture as a major source of environmental burden. And what we see today is that agriculture accounts for a substantial share of global emissions, 70% of freshwater withdrawals, almost 40% of land use, and it's also a major source of pollution, deforestation, biodiversity loss, and so on. And this is really not sustainable, and there is a global call for new approaches, such as, for example, regenerative agriculture, agroecology, but also the use of new technologies for farmers, such as early warning systems or decision support systems. And the third paradox instead relates to the amount of food that is produced and that is lost at the global level. And that accounts for one third of global production, more or less. What we see is that you have food losses occurring during the initial stages of the supply chain. So covering the period from agriculture up to the transformation. And also we see a problem in food waste happening at the final retail stage and also at the end user level. So here what is really needed to improve the situation is, on the one hand, to fix cultivation techniques, work on the quality of infrastructure, storage facilities, but also the access to market, which are all factors which compound the food loss in the initial stages of the supply chain. For the latter, instead, meaning the food waste, it is important to work on consumer behavior with the retail sector and catering, also through proper legislation and education, I think, has a very important role to play to prevent food waste at the consumer level.
Yeah, it's so interesting that these paradoxes exist. You know, the two extremes of the spectrum. There's an interesting video on your website where you're asking people, are there more undernourished children or are there more obese children in the world? And everyone got it wrong. They all said there's more undernourished people, and that's the wrong answer. So pretty interesting that there's actually, you know, more obesity. Okay, sustainability. You mentioned that before. This is a crucial issue. You've developed this Food Sustainability Index, which evaluates the sustainability of national food systems in 67 countries and tracks progress toward the Sustainable Development Goals. What are some of the best practices and areas that we need to improve?
Yeah, well, the Food Sustainability Index clearly shows that there are a number of initiatives in the world that are advancing the, you know, overall sustainability of food systems, but also that a few challenges and problems still persist and are really in need of bold actions and policies. So on the nutrition side, for example, I mentioned the obesity pandemic. One very good practice that we found, that we analyzed in Europe, is, for example, the school fruit and vegetable scheme that was launched in 2009 to provide school children with fruit and vegetables, so with the aim to encourage good eating habits in young people. And we think this is a very important initiative because, you know, there is strong evidence that a low intake of fruit and vegetables for children is also a risk factor for cancer and cardiovascular diseases in later stages. And so it's really important to promote this kind of projects. And this program in Europe has reached about 20 million children in 2017, 2018, and is delivered under the Common Agricultural Policy. There are also interesting initiatives at the national level. For example, Denmark has set 45 minutes of compulsory physical activity for students. But it is important to highlight also that the obesity pandemic still needs to be tackled. So no countries so far has achieved considerable results in solving this problem. And another initiative that I would like to mention on the agriculture side is instead the Partnership for Research and Innovation in the Mediterranean Area. That is a 10-year initiative that works across 19 countries in the Mediterranean to improve water management and agricultural practice by fostering cooperation between business and academia. And we find that this program has a lot of potential to deliver better food systems in this area of the world. And last but not least, I would like to mention the efforts put forward by a number of countries and municipalities as well to reduce food loss and waste. We can see that a few cities, for example, have developed strategies to reduce food loss and waste, also making reference to the Sustainable Development Goals that prescribes the need to reduce this amount of food loss and food waste. And there are also several stories, I think, that show the potential of new digital technologies and ICT to tackle this problem. For example, Tokyo is trialing an app that basically rewards consumers who buy products that are come to an end of their shelf life. Or Milan has developed a strategy to halve food loss and waste by 2030, for instance. But we also have national strategies that are of interest. For instance, Ethiopia's national post-harvest management strategies that was launched just last year with the aim of reducing the level of losses. Post-harvest losses from about 25% to 5% by 2020.
That's fabulous. What's needed in order to get some of the other countries to move up the index? Is it just a matter of their awareness and implementing programs like the ones that you just outlined?
What I think is that it is crucial to have, first of all, the political willingness to do so. And, you know, the and really the willingness to take bold action, to act as leaders in progressing towards sustainability. Of course, this comes with, you know, trade-offs. That there are a lot of trade-offs that need to be considered. But we really need to hurry up because we have 10 years ahead if we want to achieve the SDGs, and this needs the cooperation and the active engagement of all stakeholders, from business to policymakers to citizens as well. We as citizens have a huge role to play, I think.
When I looked at the index, of course, you always look to see where your country is, and I saw that the U.S. was about halfway down the third quartile, which is not good, but not surprising either. So I think we have to do more. And actually, the best countries were in Europe and Japan and South Korea. So I think you're right. We all have to get create more awareness and get, you know, our governments and our leaders to get on the ball and put these programs in place. Okay, let's turn to education. You mentioned that earlier on. What does the foundation do in that area? I know you have several programs.
Yes, well, education is really a core area of work for our foundation. And since 2018, we have been working on an educational project of training targeting teachers. So from primary to high school, we target teachers focusing on raising their knowledge on food, nutrition, and environmental sustainability so that they can, you know, deliver courses and classes also to students. And this is all done under the umbrella of global citizenship and the sustainable development goals using digital teaching tools. So this project is part of a memorandum of understanding with the Italian Minister for Education and Research, and basically works in three areas. So we work on the creation of tools for different target groups of students. So I mean tools and exercises that teachers can bring to classes. We also train teachers through online courses, but also in-person classes with a very multidisciplinary approach. And last but not least, we have an award that seeks to valorize excellence in teaching these topics, and also that strives to engage the whole class in showing what they have learned and understood from these modules on food sustainability and nutrition. And so far, we have reached about 3,000 teachers in Italy and almost 150,000 students. But for the years to come, we really want to bring this program also to other countries. I would also like to mention a project that is very dear to me, that is a massive online open course that we have developed with the United Nations Sustainable Development Solutions Network and the University of Siena on the challenges and opportunities of building more sustainable food systems in the Mediterranean area. This MOOC is really for students, for teachers, or just for people wanting to understand this complex and multifaceted dimensions and trends occurring in the Mediterranean region. So I would really encourage you to take a look.
Yeah, Jeff Sachs runs that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's well known here in the States.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, anybody can go take that course. It's
yes,
free.
Absolutely.
Right?
Everything we do is completely free, available on our website, and everything is open access.
Yeah. Okay. All right. And tell us, what is Sue Eatable Life? Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yes.
So it's S-U and then Eatable Life. For those of you who haven't heard of it.
Okay. Yes, right. So Eatable Life is a EU-funded project that has the aim to show that through the promotion of healthier and more sustainable diets, we can reduce carbon emissions and water footprints in Europe. And we think this is very important because this approach can contribute to reach the EU target of achieving a 40% reduction in CO2 emissions by 2030. So basically, this three-year project works with interventions in canteens, in universities and companies across Italy and the UK as case studies. Through an experimental phase that consists of actions in three main areas that are communication and awareness, so the need to increase the knowledge of the customers, of the canteen, so of people on the linkages between food, climate and water, as well as on the power of their individual food choices for the benefit of their health and the health of the planet. Secondly, we are working very hard with the canteen's managers and with the chefs to make the food offering in the canteen consistent with the principles of a sustainable and healthy diet. And thirdly, we are using a digital platform that through the mechanism of a social network wants to engage people to adopt this type of new dietary pattern through educational content, but also individual and group challenges and awards. And we have very ambitious targets ahead, because in 3 years we aim to reduce CO2 emissions of 5,000 tons and also to achieve 2 million cubic meters of water saved. And this can be done only by involving different stakeholders, such as school, universities, municipalities, private companies, and also the public at large. So it's a very ambitious project.
Yeah, it's really interesting that you chose to do it through universities and school food service facilities and company canteens. So that's a very unique approach. Okay, Marta, is there anything else you'd like our listeners to know about BCFN, and or is there anything that you would call upon food technologists to do to support your efforts?
Well, I would like just to encourage you to engage on this big challenge that we have ahead and to visit our website and social channels. But also I want to warmly invite you to attend our International Forum on Food and Nutrition in Milan, in person or in streaming. And this is going to happen on December 3rd, 2019.
So, well, I guess the people can go to your website to find out if they want to join, either go there or join online. I'm sure there'll be information.
Yes, absolutely. Yep. Everything is okay. Online.
Well, I will go. Is it a one-day event? Or?
It's a one-day event, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I will attend. Okay, good. Okay. Well, thank you so much, Marta. It's been great having you on our podcast. We really appreciate it. It's been extremely interesting. And I just want to thank you so much.
Thank you, Donna. Thank you so much. It was much fun. Thank you.
Well, thank you both for your time and your thoughts. And thank you to our listeners. If you're enjoying Food Disruptors, please let us know by leaving a review on iTunes or by connecting with IFT. You can find us at IFT on Twitter and by searching the Institute of Food Technologists, or IFT, on Facebook and LinkedIn. Thanks for listening to Food Disruptors. I'm your host, Matt Teagarden. Have a great day, everyone.